Prepare yourself for the only talk radio show you'll want to turn up.
Crank this thing.
Sirius XM Pandora presents the place where your hard rock and metal voice can still be heard.
You bet your ass, baby.
Unfiltered, uncensored, say whatever you want.
Hit the record button. Anything can happen, you know?
I know that ain't nobody out there came to be mellow tonight, now did you? I say there ain't nobody. I say there ain't nobody not out there that even wants to be a little bit mellow. Now is there? Anybody wants to get mellow, you can turn around and get the fuck out of here, all right?
This is the Trunk Nation Podcast with host A. Trunk.
What's up, everybody? It's Eddie Trunk. Welcome to another episode of the Eddie Trunk Podcast. New every Thursday, wherever you get your podcast. Thank you for subscribing, and thank you for listening. And as I tell you every single week, every interview you hear on the Eddie Trunk Podcast all originated on my Sirius XM radio show, which is Trunk Nation, heard Monday through Friday live, 3 to 5 Eastern, noon to 2 Pacific, Faction Talk, Sirius XM channel 103, or anytime, live or on demand on the Sirius XM app. If you only listen to this podcast and you can get Sirius XM, you're getting about a tenth of what I do on the radio on a daily basis. So please come on board and join me for the live radio show each and every day. Or like I said, you can listen on demand anytime you want. And if you don't have Sirius XM and you're saying, I've been thinking about it, whatever, well, we'll make it easy for you. Just go to SiriusXM.com/EddieTrunk. You can get a free 3-month trial to listen through the app or listen on your radios. No credit card required. Hear the full show and hear everything, instead of just a little taste that we give you here on the podcast. Social media at Eddie Trunk, X, Instagram, Facebook page, EddieTrunk.com is the website. Next appearance for me, the 29th of March, Wichita, Kansas, with Tom Kiefer and LA Guns at the Cotillion. March 30th, Oklahoma City. You can join me at the Diamond Ballroom. Same bill, Tom Kiefer and LA Guns. Hope to see you if you are in those areas of the country. And what else do I have to tell you? Well, I'll tell you what we're doing today on the podcast, because it's going to be a lot of fun the next few weeks. I just came off the Monsters of Rock cruise, which I've hosted every year. The latest sailing wrapped up a few weeks ago. Had a great time, as always. Tons of bands on board. And one of the things I do, probably the last 5 years or so on the cruise, is I actually do this radio show, well, my radio show, the one I just told you about, Trunk Nation, live on Sirius XM from the ship. And we are able to get that done somehow by establishing a connection and be able to broadcast right from the ship with some of the amazing artists that join the cruise. And again, there's like 50 bands on the Monsters of Rock cruise, so I don't get the opportunity to even see everyone, let alone talk to everyone. But each day, I did 3 broadcast days from the cruise, and each time I was able to pick off a couple guests each day to join us from an area on the ship that's basically the sports bar on the ship called Playmakers. So it's a bit crazy, it's a bit chaotic, it can be a bit loud, but we have a great time just, you know, rolling by the seat of our pants and seeing who's walking by or seeing who we could get to join us for the radio show. And this week, next week, and the following week, I'm going to bring you all the guests from each of the 3 broadcast days from the cruise. Now, again, not the full shows, that's when I hope you come on board with Sirius XM, but I'm going to give you all the interviews that I did on those 3 days. So the first broadcast day on the cruise was a Monday, and I'll run down the guests that joined me. Dave Menichetti of Y&T, who Y&T's bass player Aaron Lee jumps in on this as well. And it was so great to see Dave. And, you know, he's coming back out of battling cancer and seems to be stronger than ever. We talk about that and a whole lot more. Nuno Betancourt of Extreme. We get into a lot of stuff with Nuno. And also Dana Strum drops by from Slaughter. And we finish up with the chaos that is Faster Pussycat. I think all the members of the band grabbed a microphone and came by, all good buddies. So this was a lot of fun. This was how the first broadcast day got started. And we bring you those interviews. We'll let them roll right in a row, and you can hear everybody, and it'll be self-explanatory who you're hearing. And enjoy day one, broadcast day one, from the Monsters of Rock Cruise 2024. Enjoy. Our first guest out of the gate here on the Monsters of Rock Cruise between today, tomorrow, and Wednesday with our live broadcast is a guy that I have been a fan of forever and has become a friend over the decades as well. And I am so excited and so thrilled to have this guy back on the cruise, back on stage, back singing, back playing guitar, and back with his great band Y&T, Mr. Dave Menichetti, everybody. Dave, welcome back. It's been as you discussed on my show in the past, as many know, you battled prostate cancer. You had a hell of a fight there on your hands, but you have come out the other side remarkably, seemingly better than ever, dude. What the hell is going on? I mean, first of all, congratulations and thank God you're okay. And I had a chance to go out before you played the pre-party and also introduce you the other night. And I got to tell you, man, and I'm getting a little goosebumpy right now, but I mean, and I speaking to some other people that have been longtime fans and friends of yours, people like Jeff Scott Soto and everything, I got emotional for a minute just because you and your band and your music mean so much to me and so many other people. And to see, you know, with what you went through, man, we get worried as fans, you know, is sure. It going to be okay? And right. Just the human element, the fan element, everything. And is he going to still be able to do this?
Right.
And to see you up there doing it, I swear to God, it's got to be better than I've ever seen, is incredible. So how do you feel? Because, you know, you've been back at it now for a little bit. How do you feel?
I feel normal. I feel like my normal self. Nothing's changed from that end. I don't know. Maybe that all that radiation made me a better singer. I don't know.
Well, kind of half joked about that, but I don't understand. Like, were the treatments tough? Did they knock the hell out of you, or was it not that bad?
You know, there were moments, definitely. But I mean, when I think about people that have devastating cancer and the chemotherapy that they're going through and all of these treatments that they have, I'm not going to complain. You know, I think in the total of it all, it was not that bad. Yeah.
How long were you shut down, basically dealing with it from not being on the road, not playing, not singing?
At least 6 months. Yeah. Okay. Because there were numerous parts to the treatment. I had to go in for an operation at first, and then I had to wait 5 weeks before this targeted radiation would go on, and that was 5 days a week for I think 5 weeks in a row. Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
There's very, very few people that I can say this about in true honesty, when I could tell somebody, okay, Y&T's been going 50 years, and if I met a kid right now and I told them, like, you got to know about this band called Y&T, you should go see them. For almost every band I would say that about, I would be like, but you should have seen them back in 82.
Right.
You should have seen them when they were dead. And I can honestly say, and I can say this with full certainty, having now just watched you, that I could comfortably tell that to somebody to go see Y&T right now. And with all honesty say, they are as good as they've ever been.
Thank you.
And a lot. And yeah, and look, people know me, man. I don't blow smoke. I wouldn't be saying this if I didn't feel this. Everybody on this ship has been talking about it. So, I mean, do you attribute it to anything? I mean, I know you're coming off of battling and everything, but I don't know, maybe the rest, the downtime. I mean, you were always great, but this is crazy how great you're sounding.
Thank you. I don't have anything to attribute it to. I think that my own personal self, I'm comfortable in my own skin, I guess you could say. I'm very self-aware. I'm not the kind of guy that, you know, goes through these swings per se. So I feel about the same as I did before I went in for the cancer treatment. I did have an issue at one point because I think of the fact that we were playing less consistently, that when I would go back after not singing for a few months, I pushed my voice too hard when I was trying to warm up for the next bunch of shows, and I got a polyp on my vocal cord, and I worked to get that done, you know, naturally and get it, you know, reduced to nothing. And in the process of doing that, I tried some different vocal exercises that I found online than I had been doing before, and they seem to be working quite nicely to keep myself in good shape, you know, for those times that we are off for a few weeks at a time.
Were you ever a warm up, warm down, big vocal exercise guy, or were you one of those singers that just comes out and does it? Because I have seen both, and I've talked to both.
Oh yeah.
Famously, a guy like Ronnie James Dio out and did it.
Yep.
And then you know, I'll see when Steve Whiteman and Kix used to play this cruise, I would see Steve do calisthenics and scream into a towel and do all this crazy warm up and warm down. What's your deal?
Well, we learned from the very beginning we took a little bit of vocal exercises when we were kids in the 70s. And I probably warmed up for about 5 minutes before I'd go on stage for the first couple of years. But most of the time in the 80s and the 90s and early 2000s, I was exactly like Ronnie. In fact, I went to see Ronnie in San Francisco one time, and he invited me backstage to his room. And just so happened I had a friend with me who was, you know, a lot of questions. And I was like, oops, sorry, man. But he goes, Ronnie, what do you do to warm up? He goes, the first note that you hear out of my voice for the night is the first note on stage. And I said, wow, another guy like me. Cool.
Yeah.
But then years later, I thought, nah, I think I better be a little more cautious.
And of course, famously with Dio, as we've talked about before, the legendary Hearing Aid recording, you're outside of Ronnie does that open. You're the first voice heard on that.
Yes.
And, you know, there's a documentary on, I think it's on Netflix now, about how they did We Are the World.
Yeah,
I saw that. Did you see it?
Yeah, I did.
Was there any parallels between that and doing
absolutely.
Hearing Aid?
Oh, of course. And, of course, they did it at the same place. A&M, you know, Studio A, the exact
right.
same place. They built the same stage setup for, you know, us to be, you know, on different levels. And the same thing where, you know, Quincy Jones was trying his hardest to like calm all of these, you know, rock star, well, you know, stars down, you know, to just pay attention and sing this one part, you know. And it was the same thing with Ronnie Dio. But when Ronnie would come out, everybody would like, okay, Ronnie's talking now.
Right.
You know,
he was the Quincy Jones.
Yeah. You can only be a smart ass for so long. And then Ronnie's talking.
Right. Yeah. Right. Right. So, Y&T, did you just play Japan? Do I have that right?
Yes, we played there.
You said it the other night when we played the night in Tokyo.
It was the end of January that we played there. Yeah.
And do you go over there often? Is that how long had it been?
Yeah, generally every 2 years, but we didn't do it recently every 2 years. It's been, I think, 2019 was the last time we had gone before. And it was great. Two sold-out shows in advance, and it was just... It was great. I mean, it was just magical. Yeah.
Yeah. 50 years for Y&T that you are celebrating, and you can tell in the set list. Now, normally when Y&T plays, they will do a good solid 2 hours, maybe then some. But obviously on here, you've got 2 one-hour sets on a thing like a cruise ship. So you've got to really do a lot of editing on the set list. But I know that... And I noticed in the layout of the set that you are strategically kind of jumping around to all your different eras, even
yes.
going to something from, you know, Face Melter or going all the way back to Struck Down or something like that.
That's right.
So is that what people are going to see as Y&T tours? Are you going to really want to hit a little bit of all of the catalog?
Certainly this year.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I thought, since it's our 50th year anniversary, it only happens once, if it happens at all, right? And it gives us a chance to go back and really bump onto the entire catalog. Go back to the 70s when people, you know, nowadays, most people that are into Y&T, they don't even know about those first two records when we were called Yesterday and Today. And I want to give the sense of what it was like to be writing and playing this style of song back in 1974 and 75 and 76. And so, you know, here's the chance to do that. So we were pulling something from every single record that we've recorded and putting at least one or two songs or more, depending on the record, into the set. Of course, when we're doing 60 minutes, that's almost impossible. So I had to skip a record or two. And in fact, last night was the first time since we wrote the song Forever that we did not play it in the set.
Oh, wow.
Because somebody came up two songs before the end and said, we got to court catch your set, you know. And so I was like, I know I shouldn't do it, but let's just try it this time. And so we cut Forever and we did Rescue Me at the end. And
that I saw that. Yeah, I did. Yeah. But yeah, it's tough. I mean, obviously you've got that catalog and everybody wants to hear different songs. I heard somebody was yelling out Dirty Girl and you were like, we only got an hour, you know, and Dirty Girl 6.5 minutes or whatever it becomes. But I think you space, and I really like the fact that you spiked in like I'm Coming Home and things like that from the more recent records, because that I mean, it feels like new, but that's probably 15 years old now.
14 years old,
yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. So I mean, it's interesting how some of that newer stuff takes on new stature as time goes on. So I'm glad that is being included as well. What is the plan for Y&T now as far as this year is concerned? You got a bunch of dates?
We do. We'll be going home and playing quite a few shows, and then we hit Europe and the UK one time again this year. We haven't done that since 2019, so it's a long time before, you know, we've been back there. And that was usually in every single year. I mean, it was like clockwork. We do a full U.S. tour. We do a bunch of dates on the West Coast. We do Japan. And then we'd go to Europe for 2 months. And that was clockwork every single year for almost 20 years in a row, the last 20 years up until 2020, basically. And so, you know, things changed because of the pandemic, obviously. And we had to pare some dates down. And, you know, it's been a decision on my part as well to just kind of like not 100% go right back to all of that, but do maybe 75% of that and see how we all feel about doing this, you know, crazy long trips on the road and so on and so forth, because who knows? I mean, you know, my age might say something, but it's not how I feel. You know, I feel the same as I did last year and 20 years before, you know, but you never know what's going to happen, right? And you might get tired before you know it, you know, and go, well, I don't know if I want to do, you know, so many shows, so many in a row and so on and so forth. But honestly, I think it's just, it's a good thing to kind of like ramp back up rather than just go, you know.
I saw on your website I'm on the newsletter blast, and it said something about you were doing some auctioning off some stuff from the Y&T archives.
Yes.
But, and it said in parentheses, don't worry, Dave's not retiring.
Exactly.
So there's a concern out there from your fan base that might be the case. Do you feel personally like, You see some bands that just kind of quietly go away, and then other bands will do the farewell and play the farewell card. When the time comes, how do you want to put Y&T to bed?
Well, I would announce it, because then at that point, those fans that say, hey, I've never seen you, but we've been in your town 100 times in the last 40 years, maybe they might come out and enjoy what the band is all about. But I wouldn't put it to bed if I was ailing or if the band sounded half-ass or something. I mean, if we started sounding, you know, let's put it this way. There's so many people over the years that have gotten grief because there's tons of videos on YouTube of, you know, not sounding so good.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I don't want to be one of those.
Yeah.
You know, and every rare once in a while when I get some sort of really bad flu or something, I'm on the road and I have a bad night of singing, I go, please don't put this on YouTube. I don't want somebody going, yeah, Menichetti's done. It's over.
He hit the wall.
No, I mean, I'm way too into doing the right thing and being the best I can be. But honestly, I think I would just say, yeah, here it is. I think this is probably it. And, you know, and that'll be it.
That's kind of how Rush did it. Rush didn't officially say Clockwork Angels was the end, but they kind of gave it a little like, well, this could be, and kind of put it out there.
Yeah.
So yeah, I could see that. So the guy just sat next to you over here, who is, throw that headset on, brother.
All right.
This guy, look, Y&T, obviously Dave is the sole original member of the band and guitarist, lead singer, but the rest of this band right now is just unbelievably on fire. And that includes Mike Vanderhuel, of course, and John Nyman. And the guy sitting next to Dave right now, the bass player in the band, Mr. Aaron Lee, who, said that his... Thank you. Aaron was the quote something like, your music career would not have been complete if you didn't have this moment on the show. As I hear something like that?
That's absolutely true. And I swear I left my wife back at the resort off the ship to make it back to the show to be on Eddie's show. Well,
I appreciate it. Aaron's a regular listener, and I appreciate it. And in addition to Y&T, you also do some of your own music as well that I played from time to time. People can find online, right?
Yeah. And thank you, Eddie, for the support. That means a lot. And, you get bored, and if you're a musician, it's just what you do is you just make music. So that's what happens.
You came over to me when I was standing in the wings of the stage after I was watching you guys, and I was just telling you how blown away I was at the performance and hearing Dave again and everything. And you came over to me, and you're like, yeah, imagine me. Like, at the end of the day, you're still just a huge Y&T fan. Now you have the opportunity to be in this band and be a part of it. So it's got to be a kind of pinch yourself moment every night on stage, right?
Absolutely, and especially last night in the theater when we played I Believe in You.
Yeah.
We always pull it back, and Dave's moment is right there. And I look at the crowd, and I'm not kidding. A lot of times I see people weeping when Dave is soloing during I Believe
it's
in
so
You.
It's so bad.
They're overwhelmed with emotion.
No, I understand that. I said to Dave before you got here, I get emotional because... Again, it takes me back to being a kid and in high school and going to clubs to see Y&T and all the stuff. Growing up and, you know, starting in radio in 83 and playing Mean Streak and all of that right out of the gate. So it is very emotional. I'm curious, Aaron, from your standpoint as a Y&T fan who now has been in the band for how long? How long have you been playing bass?
I'm coming up on 8 years with the band.
8 years. What's your – and I'm going to ask Dave this question too, but I'll start with you. What's your favorite Y&T record?
Well, my introduction to Y&T was Black Tiger, just because of the cover. I hadn't even heard the band yet. I just saw the cover back when you'd flip through records when you're a kid. And, oh, that looks cool. And then I slapped it on. I was an instant fan. So I'm torn between Mean Streak and Black Tiger.
Dave, do you have a favorite Y&T record?
Not really. if you would have asked me about 30 years ago, I probably would have said Black Tiger. I like every one of them because they remind me of the time that we wrote and recorded it and all that kind of stuff. So it's a special meaning beyond just the songs on the record. You know, it's like a whole experience that I remember from that. But if you look at our set lists from year to year to year, I would say the majority of the songs we play come from the Black Tiger record.
Yeah. So let me ask this question in a nice way. Is there a Y&T record you wish you had back?
Yes.
What you'd like to, that you wish, least favorite record or record you wish you could redo or that you didn't come out the way you wanted to do it?
Yes, Down for the Count.
I would say the same thing as a fan.
Yeah.
Aaron?
Yeah, I agree. Well, and also the one with Lucy.
Ten.
Yep. Yes.
Oh, I love 10.
10 well, is great.
No, just for the mix factor. To bring the bass up, you know.
A bass player,
it's,
man.
It's a little thin, that's all.
But you know what? I 110% agree with that. The guy that mixed the record, Mike Stone, was something, he was great, but he was having issues. And, there was a certain thing that we used to say. We could tell when a guy was mixing a record that had cocaine problems because everything was at 3K, and there was nothing else, you know. And it was very brittle. Luckily, because I was there and, doing my part behind him, to sort of settle it down a bit, it became a little less than that. But
you still doing Medicetti Wines?
I stopped doing it in 2020.
All right.
We got home from our U.S. tour, and in fact, literally, they shut down everything 2 dates before the end of our U.S. tour. So we got 99% of it done. We show up in we were coming from Idaho, and we showed up in Seattle, and of course, Seattle was kind of like home base for the pandemic at first,
Right.
And we weren't sure if we were going to come out, and they shut us down. So we went home. And at that point, we were kind of like, a month later going, what are we doing with everything? And of course, the wine thing, we love it. I'm seriously a wine freak, obviously, but it was so much time involved and so cost prohibitive. I mean, you have to buy grapes and barrels and pay for your winemaker and everything else 3 years in advance of every release, and you just keep going year after year after year. It was a lot of time and a lot of money. And we just thought, you know, from this point forward, maybe it makes sense to just cut and run. So we did. I mean, we had a lot of wine left over. We discounted the hell out of it to sell it off to people and hopefully they could enjoy it. You know,
A couple quick things because we got our next guest standing by. Would you like to make another Y&T record?
Yes.
Is it in production? Or are you planning on it?
It's not in production.
Did you write it yet?
You can slap my face, and I'm sorry. But no, I have not written it yet, no. We will write together as a band, hopefully, because that's the way I like to write generally. I do like writing on my own as well, but I like getting the whole band involved because that creates a different sound than you coming up with everything and saying, okay, now you play this. And so,
right,
yeah.
Right. And last thing, and this is probably the most important piece of this, because as we started this conversation out, I reminded everybody that, you know, Dave just battled prostate cancer and thank God beat it. But for, you know, and I'm very open on the air about talking about health stuff and screenings, yes, and stuff, because I think it's very important. You came on my show in the middle of dealing with it because we felt, right, you know, it's felt good to get the word out. So how did you know you had it, and what would you tell people listening as far as precautions? I mean, I get a physical every year. They do the PSA and all,
right,
that.
Right.
Is that how they found it in you?
That's how they found it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm very good about my health as far as, you know, I know so many guys that will not go to the doctor.
Right.
Even if their father had prostate cancer and their grandfather had it, or what, it doesn't matter. They, you know, trying to get them to the doctor to even just take a blood test, you know, is like, you know, it's unbelievable. So that was why it was a good thing for you to ask me on. And I think the more that people talk about it openly, I've already heard from numerous fans say, I think you saved my life because of you talking about it, because I wasn't doing that. And I went and got a PSA test and I had it and I got it taken care of, you know? So, I mean, that's a good thing, but you'd never know it. That's the thing. I mean, you know, if you let it go and it festers and it moves on into, right, other parts of your internal organs, then you'll know it.
Yeah.
But it's a simple blood test once a year, you know, and at least that's the way it started. Yeah.
We're all getting older. It's so important to stay on top of this stuff and take advantage of these screenings and stuff. I'm very open about talking about colonoscopies because my dad had colon cancer.
Right.
I get them every 3 years. There's this weird thing about why? It's a day, you prep.
Yeah.
It's not a big,
yeah,
deal, and you could save your life, man. So we're all getting older. I was telling this, this is the 12 Monsters of Rock cruise. So, you know, I'm 59 now. First one, I was 46. It's like, where the hell's the time going? So we're all getting older together, which is great.
Yeah.
But let's all stick around and do the right thing.
That's
for
right.
You know, keeping up on this stuff. And thank God Dave Menichetti did, because we still got him with us, still kicking ass. Thank you so much for
coming by. Thank you.
And making the time today. Everybody, yntrocks.com, the documentary, if you haven't seen it, it's been out for a while. You can get it Blu-ray, DVD, streaming, whatever. It's phenomenal. And sincerely, so happy you're back kicking ass again. So thank you, Dave.
That means a lot. Thank you.
Seriously. Bringing you interviews and guests and news from the ship. And this is a guy that I got a little nervous because right behind us is a basketball hoop. I thought he was going to be taking some shots.
I tried, man. Apparently my credit's no good here. I tried my best, but it didn't work out.
There literally is, because we're in a sports bar, there literally is a hoop and a basketball. And while Nuno was waiting, as Dave Menichetti was finishing up, he was like thinking of stroking a couple, but better off you didn't.
Yeah.
Good to see you, man. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks. I made it.
You made it.
2 years later, but yeah, I'm here.
It was last year, wasn't it?
Felt like
for people that don't know the backstory, last year Nuno and Gary were supposed to come because the Extreme album was just coming out, and they were supposed to come and do the show, and they said they're running a little late, they're playing basketball up on the top deck. I said, all right, we'll wait. And then Robbie, who's their manager, is a good friend of mine, comes down with a note Nuno blew out his knee. He's not going to make it. And there was a lot of concern because obviously the record and the tour was about to start that you weren't going to be able to do it. You tried on the ship, I remember. You toughed it out the best you could. But how do you feel now, man? Because you still have to have surgery, right?
Yeah, no, listen, I feel bad about what happened. It was a very, very dumb decision to play basketball. I blame it on Gary. I was on my way to get a slice of pizza down here, and we agreed that we weren't going to play that morning. Not kidding. And then he just showed up at my door ready to go. I'm like, what are you doing? He's dragging me to go down. Let's just play for 10 minutes, just long enough for me to blow up my knee. But I wish I didn't go. But I felt bad because I've never sat down playing a show. I'll never do that again. But it was pretty painful. But and then I had to cancel in three, which really was upsetting. But was I the reason why? I'm not the reason why there's no game this year. Please tell me it's not my fault.
I just heard that there's no basketball anymore, and it might be your fault because.
Great.
But no. I don't mean it in the sense because of what happened to you, but I think that you were a cautionary tale from every other musician on this ship that thought it'd be a good idea to play basketball.
Yeah, I mean, I was actually my knee, but I was thinking about how stupid it kind of was to play because of our hands in the first place. Because the first play somebody did. Smashed my hand to block a shot I threw, and it literally pulled my middle finger back. I'm thinking, wow, that was close. I don't know why I didn't stop there, but
right,
yeah. So that was it, and we never showed up. But I didn't want to. My ACL, three things happened. My ACL completely ripped apart, torn fully. My meniscus shred in like two or three places, and my MCL was fully sprained. So I fixed two of them, but I the ACL I would have had to cancel like 6-8 months of show, so I didn't want to do this. So I have no ACL, but I got a brace. It's cool.
So are you gonna get that done when there's downtime? I'm assuming.
Oh yeah, all that downtime that I heard about.
Not a lot, yeah. Well, you've been out touring ever since the last cruise, pretty much, and the response to the album. It was a long time coming, but the response to Extreme Six has been off the charts. Of course, it all started with Rise, the initial single, and the guitar solo heard around the world, of course, on that song. And you know, I know that you're a very accomplished, rightfully celebrated guitarist, but did it even surprise you at the initial out-of-the-box response to Rise when it hit, and the solo in particular?
No, I knew when I recorded it was the solo of the century. I knew it. No, are you kidding me? No idea. I had zero idea. When you record any solo or any song or anything you do, it's what you do. It's just normal. You're obviously going for blood and you're trying to take down all your heroes. That's how I go in, and see if would I even play this for any of my heroes, by the time I finish it. But a band at our age, a band at this point in our career, to get the response and the love we got, even in like 48 hours, my phone was blown up just because of the guitar solo on the song. And it was really confusing. It was really wild. When you have obviously people that you do admire, your peers, and you're getting emails from people like Brian May and texts from, different Morello and different guitar players asking you what you put in your cereal that morning. But it's really, all it is, it's the same as any other song, any other solo. And I think you have to go in that way. You have to do it for the love and the passion of it. Whatever happens afterwards is up to everybody else. But at our age, 50-somethings, 60-somethings, we have no business getting the kind of attention this album got. But I'm so grateful. We are so grateful for everybody and the response and the love we've gotten. We would have never been able to do the shows and the tours we did. They were almost everything throughout UK, Europe, Australia, with Living Colors, all sold out. We are so humbled and appreciative, Confused, though, still confused.
Well, I'm curious because as brilliant as the solo, look, at the end of the day, it's all about songs. If you don't have songs, yeah. I don't care what your solos are. And you got songs, obviously, amazing songs on the record. But a lot of attention was paid to that solo in Rise.
Yeah.
It's a brilliant solo, but it's actually not my favorite solo as a fan on the record.
It's not mine either.
Well, I was going to ask you, I'll tell you mine, but you want to hear mine first or yours?
Well, I mean, before you even say yours, I think what you just pointed out, I think is really important because if I sit down and do what maybe the record company and even management asked me to do is say, hey, the night before the song is released, maybe you can sit down by yourself and just play the solo through. I believe that would have killed everything. And I think that's a real lesson in like everything that you do in a guitar solo, you don't sit there and map out the solo. You feed it from your band. everything that's happening in the rhythm section, everything that's happening in the song, when a solo is in the middle of the song, it's so much more powerful. When you pull that solo out, and you can even hear some of the greatest solos, and I've heard those stems ever since stuff's been released and leaked out, you see how human guitar solos are without a band there. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think it's really important that it's part of the chemistry, that people know that those stops in that song, the pace of that song, the halftime and the fast bit as opposed to it, like those things are all the BVs behind the solo. Those things really add up to like the chemistry, and the band is what guides, a good band guides the guitar player and where to go with the solo. And the melodies have something to do with it beforehand, the lyrics, the tonality of it. So it's all one encompassing thought. And I remember when I asked people like, you know, Steve Lucas, I was like, why would people be flipping out about this solo? I literally asked him, I go, come on, it's a little bit over the top. And he said, look, he said, the truth is, it's not that there's so many great guitar players that we follow online, but a lot of them are sitting down, playing in front of the camera, and they all like drop our it in a band, in a song, in a video, where there's emotionality, not just the technical side of it, but the emotional side of it, and the fire of it, and the passion of it. Just like when we watch videos of the bands, the great era that we came up in through the 70s and 80s, you see something, and you can, it's like he said, it's like the mythology of rock and roll is there. Mm. It's not, the solo is just a piece of it, and that's what I think got everybody excited about it. I don't think it was just the solo. I think it was the whole package. You know?
Yeah. So, all right, so you want me to give you my favorite solo on the record?
Go for it, man, go for it.
Other Side of the Rainbow.
That's mine.
Is it really?
Yeah, it is.
Great minds, ladies and gentlemen. Look at that. Yeah, I mean, that's the one that, I mean, I love the song, and I love Rise, but I'm like, that solo to me is just, yeah. I mean, there's just a tone, and there's a feel, and there's a just, oh, God, it's
look,
great.
I think this the strongest, this, the best thing you can do as a guitar player, I think, when you play, the reason, just like we said for Rise, is it's when you, if you let the song guide you and you play for the song, right. Just like in Rainbow, just like in any of the other songs. And sometimes I always equate it to like Van Halen 1. In Van Halen 1, you first drop the needle and you hear Running with the Devil. So you hear this amazing sound and then you hear the song and the band first. And then Eruption happens. Eruption changed the world, it changed everything. Everybody went back to the drawing. I don't care if it's Jimmy Page or anybody else. At that time, everybody was going, what sorcery is this? You know, what is happening? And Edward, he did so much on this one piece because he was by himself. But what's beautiful about that album is the same guy who changed the whole world with, like, most of the solos and especially Eruption, and Ain't Talking About Love, plays a solo that a beginner could play. I'm not even joking. It's like if you hear that, if you go back and listen to Talking About Love, it's literally two strings, one's open, and it's like somebody just, it's like somebody playing like almost like a solo that they're just, I don't know, maybe been playing for about a year or something. But he played the exact solo for the song. You have to have the courage and the balls to play for the song first and foremost. And Edward was brilliant at that. All the Page, all of them, Brian May, they all, they had the courage to not shred all the time. They had the courage to be like very, I don't know, just not get in the way of the song. And when you do that, you actually sound way more powerful as a guitar player. When you fight it and you say, I don't care what the song is doing, I just want to impress everybody and shred, the solo ends up being really, it ends up being weaker. Even if you play faster, even if you play something impossible, it sounds weaker within the element of the song.
Mm.
You know, so.
You guys have, with this record, I was telling the other guys in your band about this in the last couple of days and your manager. It's I've not seen this happen with any band from your era with new music. And I think it's fantastic and shows that it can be proven. It can be done if you make a great record. And that is that the arc for new music from 80s bands, if they still make it, is three singles in advance of the record with videos. Record comes out. First week, we're at number 2, 6, 7 on the charts, and then usually by the second or third week, forgotten, and if the band is even playing one song in the set, it's a lot. Mm. You guys put a lot of stuff out front, but you're still putting out singles. You're still making videos. You're still standing behind the record, and it's well represented in your live set. Nobody does that, and I think that's a testament to the strength of the material, but also the fact that the way you guys set this record up and the way you continue to work it.
Yeah, look, it's all, I think it's, I think what gets left behind a little bit, there's so many great bands still doing it, but I think once we've had our period of success or whatever that moment was, and the record company was working with you, you unfortunately now as a band become, you have to become the visionaries. You have to become the visionaries in the marketing for yourselves and everything you do. Meaning what? Meaning that when you write a song or we're going to put something out, we're really brutal on ourselves. I mean, it's kind of bad in the way that we hadn't released music in a long time, but it wasn't for lack of effort. We had probably five albums worth of material. But I always said to Gary years ago, I've never wanted to put anything out unless it really, really means something to us. Not that it's a hit, not that the fans are going to love it. You never do albums for anybody else. If you do stuff for other people and other fans, then you're not really going to make a great album. I think you got to be selfish. You got to be self-centered, which I'm really good at being. And you have to, you have to really like be in a bubble and really, when I say these crazy things about, would you play this for your heroes? To me, that's the criteria of the song. Would you allow an Eddie Van Halen to walk in and listen to this song or that solo? Because if you don't and you think it's not there, then I wouldn't put it on an album, period. And I think that has to be the criteria for everybody, because if everybody holds themselves to that, all these great bands are on this boat, great bands from our era, I believe that the quality of the albums, because I think a lot of times, unfortunately, touring is a big part of our income. Touring is a big part of our lives. And we just sometimes have to put things out to tour. As opposed to having to, imagine wanting to.
Right.
You know, imagine doing it and holding off until you have something so great and raise the bar for yourselves, whoever you are. And it's not to say there isn't great music out. That's not what I'm saying. We're not the only album that's come out. But what you're saying is that you have to have the, you have to be so proud of it that it goes back to when you started. When we first started writing as kids, you couldn't wait. If you played a cool riff or something, you would want to play for your brother. Or you want to play for somebody who's going to tell you the truth, who's going to say, dude, this is horrible, or don't quit your day job. And I think it hasn't changed like that. You have to have this feeling of like, man, I think we're on to something. Mm. I think this feels good. What do you think? To the people that mean something, you will tell you the truth. So until you're ready to have that feeling where you feel like a child again, where you're like, man, I think this is cool. I think this is cool. I think somebody will dig this. I think you shouldn't be putting out music. And as far as the singles, every time I write a song, I always write a visual next to it. I always see something. I always, you know, whether it's Rainbow, whether it's Rise, I always see a video. So next to the lyrics, next to the page, on the spot at the same time, there's a full page of ideas and visuals and stuff like that. And I really wanted to, this album, because it's been a while, I wanted to do a video for every song. So we're going for 12.
Wow.
We're going for 12 because I think it's not necessarily singles. It's just, I always thought it'd be cool to have a visual album when it's all said and done, that if somebody wants to hear it,
yeah,
maybe they can go and watch it while they're listening to it.
Yeah, and I know you said you're actually in your room here on the cruise working on editing, because you direct and edit the videos and work on them.
Yeah.
And you've got, there's a song, for those that have heard the full New Extreme album, there's a lot of diversity within the record. And there is a song on this record that I told Nuno and Gary, extremely catchy and hooky, and yeah, could, you know, crazier things have happened, but it could be one of these crossover monster pop radio hits. That's coming next, right?
Yeah, well, there's three videos I'm editing right now up in my room up there, but it's Losers. Here's the Losers. We did Small Town Beautiful, but yeah, we just shot Beautiful Girls, which I jumped onto because summer is coming. It's such a summer track. It's one of those tracks that I remember when the album first came out, there were people that complimenting, you should be embarrassed having that song on that album.
I didn't think that.
And the more people say that, the more I love it. The more I love it. That's
now
the
it's
reason,
really going to become a hit.
Because the reasons we have always done what you do, it's that same thing we said. You have to be proud of every track that you do. And we grew up on bands like Aerosmith and Queen and even Van Halen that did crazy things like Could This Be Magic and did like,
sure,
you know, all these songs that were outside the box that you thought, well, should a rock band be doing this? Not necessarily ballads, just strange. Like, it's like Wholehearted. It's like More Than Words. It's like When I First Kissed You. It's like all this stuff. We've always had these, we call them out of the box kind of tracks that we love, that we fall in love with, because if you write them and you dig them, then you put them on the album. But you're right. It's that careful what you wish for, because it could be that kind of summer crossover kind of track that has nothing to do with us being a rock band or not. It's just a song, you know, but I'm excited about it. It's one of those that I had to fight for that one to be on this album.
Yeah, no, I got the vibe of that when I brought it up to Gary and everybody, but I said that, I told you, I think that thing could be a monster, and we'll see soon enough, because it's coming as a single and a video.
Can I say something to you, though?
Yeah.
Right? Can we go back about three decades, four or five decades? I have this constant thing with Gary when we're talking about the album. And everybody calls it a record. You say, I love this new record. It's not a record. Does anybody know that? It's an album. I started saying it too for years. It's an album. It's a record album. So a record they always refer to as a single. One song
right,
is a
right,
record.
Right, right, right.
And it was there's a record. It was an album of records. So when everybody says a new album, you say, oh, this is a great new record. I've always been confused as to why they're not saying albums anymore. So I want you to start this revolution.
Did I say record just
yeah,
now?
He says,
I did?
Great. Yeah, you did.
Oh, now I got to keep up.
Come on, man. Give me.
Nuno in my head constantly. Album, album. I got to remember album. Do you plan? Here's how about this?
Beautiful
for a
Girls
second?
Is a great record.
It's a great
Six
record.
Is
Six is an album.
There you go.
Here's how's this? Have you already thought about the next album?
You kidding me? It's already done. No, we're onto it. We're onto it. I think I have.
Onto it for real?
Yeah. Let me see. I'll show you. Hold on a second. I think I have proof somewhere.
It's gonna get a sneak peek at the next Extreme album.
Put it this way.
It's not gonna take 15 years.
This
hopefully.
Right here is voice notes, right? So this is like everything I write or everything we write on tour and you know as since the album came out. So this is all new ideas.
Don't lose that, man.
It keeps going.
That up.
Hold on. I'm not done yet.
Wow.
Hold on.
Nuno is, for the radio audience, not on the ship, Nuno's scrolling through pages of voice notes. But isn't that a problem when you have that much because then the self-editing becomes a problem?
No, never. Whenever you go through this stuff, it's so obvious. It's so obvious. That's what I mean by stuff that really touches you or means something to you or still excites you. It's the ones that jump out. There's no doubt. One of those things that I've never worked on a song for... like the creation of a song for more than like a few hours.
Wow.
Because I'm always of the mind that if you have to labor it and you have to force it and you're working on it for days and days and weeks, I just don't think that you're forcing it to be good. I think when you have magic and it happens, like, you know, whether it's doing the Rise solo, whether it's doing the song, the solo happened in, you know, in just like that, in minutes, because you're in that zone. And when the same thing with writing, when you're writing something, whether it's the Banshee riff that just happened or whether it's even Rainbow, it just happens. I think if you have to work it out and plan it out for too long, it becomes stale, and then it's not magical anymore, I don't think.
How have the dates been with Living Color? I think that's a great bill. I love those guys. You and Vernon on stage back-to-back has got to be awesome. Corey and Gary back-to-back, great singers and great guys on stage as well. I've not been able to catch one because of my schedule, but how have the dates been?
Yeah, thanks for the prioritizing. I really appreciate it. So,
hey, I got nothing to
so
do but
busy,
come to
so
follow
busy.
Extreme around.
No, it's been really cool, man. It's something that, you know, there's a handful of bands that came out back in the 1900s, back in the 80s along with us that were a little bit like problem children that didn't fit into the metal scene that, you know, in our case had, you know, songs like More Than Words or a bit of a funk element to us. So things that we did that were like Beautiful Girls that people were like, who are you? What are you doing? You don't fit here. And they were one of those bands as well. There was like, you know, King's X was kind of like that a
sure.
little outside. So there was a few bands that were, that we called, you know, the land of misfit bands, you know, the land of misfit toys. But so we thought it'd be cool. We've been wanting to do something with them forever. It took like 38 years, but everything we do seems to take time. But I think it's a great bill. I think it's really interesting, and I think at least culturally it has a lot of the same tones and stuff like that. And like you said, great musicians, great writers. You know, Vernon's a killer player. I was super excited we were doing the tour with them once I found out, and then I was like, yay, oh shit. Vernon's coming on before me.
I think you more than hold your own.
Every guitar player, they don't like that. So I figured I'd call him. You know, I called him up and I said, hey, man, I'm really, you know, excited that we're doing this together. Would you mind kind of just like pulling back?
Oh, Jesus.
Pulling back just a little with that fusion, crazy jazz shit that you're doing. There. I don't know.
Have you guys crossed over at all? Have you like jammed together or anything?
We did at the end. I think it was at the end of the Australian run. We did rock and roll together, two kits out there, and we did Zeppelin's rock and roll. But we keep talking about doing stuff. But, you know, I don't know what happened with touring and clubs. We're not playing clubs so much, but theaters and stuff like that. Curfews are brutal now, post, like, pandemic. Nobody lets you run over a second without $10,000 a second. So every time we want to, like, jam or do something there, everybody's just ready to throw you out and clean up. So we're working out some jams and stuff to do.
I think they're going to pull you out of here in a minute because I know you got to play. You're going to do the Sail Away.
Are we playing today?
You're playing.
Oh,
you're playing up on the pool stage in a couple hours
as
we sail away. Hey, last thing I wanted to ask you because and then I'll let you go. So a few years ago, we were on this cruise, and there was a Van Halen tribute band playing, the Atomic Punks, and they came to me and they said, hey, if you can get in touch with Nuno, will you ask him if he'll come up and play with us? And I said, of course. So I sent you a text and you said, yeah, tell him anything but Mean Street because I don't like playing the beginning of that. And then, of course, they bring you up and they ask you to do Mean Street. Now, I just did a thing with Joe Satriani on my radio show because Joe is about to go out and play Van Halen, and he was struggling trying to play the beginning of Mean Street. Do you really not know how to play that right, or were you just messing around?
No, I can play it.
You can play it. I thought so. Satch, because he's on the ship. He's still trying to figure it out.
No, but having said that, you know what? I remember when Joe, he was on Stern, right? I think it was Stern.
Stern and then my show, the same thing.
Yeah, and
thing,
he played
that.
Yeah, so, you know, and then I started getting videos from other guitar players telling me how bad it was and how, like, what is he doing? What is he thinking and all that? And I think people need to know that Joe Satriani or Jimmy Page or anybody else, Joe Satriani is the greatest Joe Satriani of all time. Like, he is a legend. He is one of the most incredible players, big influence on me. But if anybody's going to take on somebody else, it'd be like asking even Edward. I saw Edward perform. This should nail it. I saw Edward perform when I was really, really young at the NAMM show. He went up and he was a last-minute addition to the night. Was nothing to do with rock guitar players. It was like Steve Morris from the Dixie Dregs. It was all these Alvin Lee, like country chicken-picking electric guitar players. So it was like four of them, and then it got to Edward. And I was like, wow, this is going to be great. I remember sitting on the floor and like watching in the front. And I said this to Edward, and he remembers. Like, by the time a solo got to Edward, it wasn't great. Not because Edward isn't great. It was the music that they were playing and all this real country, crazy stuff. And Edward starts doing Edward. It sounded like kind of a fish out of water. And it was strange. It was seeing. Remember I said about when you step out of your band and step out of your comfort zone or whatever it is? I don't care how great you are. It's what Joe's doing. Joe is a very elasticy, bar-driven, really interesting, creative guitar player. Edward is a very percussive. Really, Mean Streets is like, Edward was a drummer. You might as well be a drummer playing the beginning of Mean Streets. All that tapping, all that playing, it doesn't come from guitar playing. It comes from being a percussive drummer at heart. And it's difficult, I'm telling you, it's difficult to emulate someone when the way you play is so different. So when you hear Joe play Van Halen, Edward, you better expect that it's Satriani's Van Halen. Right. It's Satriani doing it. Just like if I did it or anybody else did it, it would be as close as possible, but it's still going to be me doing it or somebody else doing it. It's not, everybody treats it like an Olympics that you want to be like in a tribute band or a clone. It's never going to happen. Nobody will ever sound like Edward playing the beginning of Mean Streets. No one will. I don't care, even in that tribute band. They just don't. There's a feel. There's a pocket. Everybody looks at Edward as a solo player, but his most powerful gift and the most powerful thing he does that gets overlooked is his rhythm playing. Mm. His rhythm playing, his pocket, his swing, his feel is everything. He even takes it into his solos, and Mean Streets is a perfect example of that. Yeah. Mean Streets is rhythm playing. It's not even soloing.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for Nuno Bettencourt. He's got to go get ready to play. Thank you for coming by.
Thank you, my brother.
Great to see you, man.
Thank
Congratulations
you. Thank you,
on the record. If you don't have six, check out the whole record. It's such a cool record. And more shows, I'm sure, are coming up. And, of course, here on the ship and around the country or wherever you're listening, keep an eye open for more extreme dates and more videos and singles coming as well. So keep an eye on that. Thanks, Nuno. This guy is, even though I am in Vegas part-time and he is a full-time Vegas resident, we rarely, if ever, see each other there, but we do find ourselves running into each other at all kinds of places all over the world, from everything from private parties to cruise ships to, you know, getting paid in dollar bills, cash in Wichita or something. Dana Strum of Slaughter is here, ladies and gentlemen. Good to see you, brother.
Thank you. Good to see you. And you are correct. I still cherish the picture of the cash pickup with you and I between us and the adventures of the road.
Dana and I were doing a gig together. I was hosting, Slaughter was playing, and we got paid in dollar bills. It looked like we made millions of dollars. So we got this like a hip-hop video photo. Dana's got this big sack of bills, and we're like, look at our, holding up our money. It looks like we got thousands of dollars. They're all singles.
Yeah, right.
It's like a casino or something. We got the dollar bill payment or something.
Falls into the category of you can't make that stuff up.
No, no, no. How are you, man? Slaughter has been remarkably busy for a while now. You have told me, I mean, you're a businessman as well and a manager and been in this business forever. Business for you guys now and how things are going now is really almost on par with what you did back in the day in terms of the business and the interest in the band, right?
It's been one of the most humbling things probably from the time we started. You know, we were hopeful that people would enjoy the music, and we just hoped people would give us a chance. And by the time Up All Night and Flight of the Angels clicked for us, we were like, wow, it started to happen. Advance the clock, most of these groups were almost put out of business by a change in music. And we were certainly included in that. And, you know, you go from playing Madison Square Garden with Kiss to playing a glorified laundromat. And it's up to you at that point if you're going to keep going and if you're going to believe in your music, believe in yourself. All of us did. And the last few years have been unbelievable. And, I'm, you know, all of us, thankful, grateful, humble, appreciative. And I always tell everybody, if it wasn't for the people out there, you know, we wouldn't have a job. And that's the truth. That's the way it really works.
And you're in a great position because you got a singer who can still sing the stuff, which is truly remarkable, yeah. Given the bar that he set, Mark did, back in the day. And Blando, who has been there for a long time now, the late, great Tim Kelly, of course, ever since he left us. Blando, who not only is an amazing player, but vocally is just unbelievable. I mean, I've heard Blando sing lead vocal a lot. It's mind-blowing what he does. And now the drummer you've been using in the band, the young Jordan Cannata, what a beast he is. So the band is like in overdrive right now.
You know, the band is a good, fun band to see. And another humbling moment with Jordan. You know, you get a new guy and you want to talk to him and ask him about his birth date and ask him. And he, you know, this is a real way to take a shot for anybody right in the face. I get, you know, oh, look, I've got your info. Can I just verify your birth date? Now I'm paying attention. Your phone's blowing up and people are making you offers. And now I'm paying attention. And I said, it says 1990 here. And this guy was born 1 month after our record came out. And just to show you, you know, and he says, no, it's real. And I'm like, are you sure you know this stuff? And he says, I probably know it better than you guys, which at certain times wouldn't be that hard. And he's an incredible person. And the video that you'll see, we play the theater tonight. The video you see, he took the initiative to do this stuff. And what do you think? And everything he's done, I'm like, man, you should have been born doing this stuff from the beginning. He's one of those guys that it's just that guy. You know, we're lucky to have him, and he's a great person.
Slaughter, historically, at least in my recollection, of course, I've known you guys since day one pretty much, has traditionally played predominantly in the U.S., if I'm not mistaken. And recently, you were telling me when I saw you here on the ship yesterday, you just came from playing Australia. So are you getting out of the U.S. more and trying, and maybe I'm wrong on that. Did you always go outside of the country much back in the day or just starting to do that now more?
No, we first time in Australia, and if somebody hasn't been there, it's incredible. We had never been invited, and a lot of people from those regions, you know, why aren't you here? How come you're not doing this? And it's really the honest truth. We were never really invited. And you can be successful or have records that are successful. It doesn't mean you're invited to those territories.
Right.
But we did go, and it was an incredible experience and full houses and a great reaction. And what an eye-opener. We played Mexico. We played Japan. We played up in Europe. We did London and the U.K. We sold out the Marquee. And coming down the stairs of the Marquee in a towel and an umbrella, I turn around and Bloss, the drummer, turns around. He goes, dude, it's Ozzy. First thing we hear is, thanks for inviting me. I live up the street.
Oh, wow.
I'm like, well, I didn't think you'd come. And, you know, it's just those weird things happen. So that happened out of the country. But, look, U.S., Canada have been very good to many of these bands, and we're thankful for that. And going to Australia is a super long plane flight. And the reaction from people and the love for those songs What do you say other than we're grateful and thank you?
Yeah. Is there any interest in wanting to make a new Slaughter record or new music? Have you thought about that? Is that not of interest to you?
Well, you know, you border on how come, and you border on who's out there that cares. And obviously playing more, you know, you see a bunch of people that care. But it's a tough battle. Right now, doing a documentary biopic on the real story, because we were unusual. We wrote everything ourselves. We recorded it ourselves. We produced it ourselves. As you know, we handle ourselves.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a pretty full plate. We don't have a bunch of outside people. But the story of Mark's father's belief in him and the love that this guy had for his kid, and I came from a very opposite situation of that. So it's a really inspiring story, and I think it would move a lot of people. And I think our plan is put this thing out and get it rooted, and then have some new songs in this thing. And let people enjoy a story, and maybe people that don't know anything about us, and allow them to enjoy maybe a new song or two with a purpose.
There is a great story there, and I'm thrilled to hear that you're... So basically, it'll be a documentary. It's in production now?
We've met with writers. We've met with people that are looking to do it. There's two large companies that are really out there saying people would be... It's human interest. It's music. It's a really different story.
Right. So... timetable for that you really don't know, because it still sounds like it's kind of in the early stages, right?
Let's hope within a year.
Yeah. It's amazing what's happened with Slaughter's music too, because there was a woman a year or two ago that sent me, she had done like ballady orchestrated versions of Slaughter songs. I forget her name. You would know.
Kari Walgren.
Yeah, what was the story there? That was amazing what she did with your music.
She approached us. She's a very famous, known voiceover actress. She has roles constantly on Rick and Morty and many, many others. She's a known, wonderful, wonderful actress. And the music helped change and save her life. She came to see us at XM's presentation in Irvine of the Hair Metal Fest.
Okay.
And she approached us and said, I have an idea. I'm thinking of doing your music. And I said, well, good luck. We're thinking of doing it too tonight. But she says, I have a really different idea. And she really did envision them. I'd play her version of Real Love for people. She had a Disney arranger, and, you know, she called in a lot of her Hollywood friends, and they're all very good. She did an arrangement of some of these songs that almost, I mean, I was in tears. Yeah. Because you record the songs and you live them and you play them, but you hear someone else's interpretation of them and you're like, man, you know, that's a really good song no matter who did it. And she hit it out of the park. I would play her version before I'd play our own. And She ended up, the irony, she ends up with Bobby Rock, and they have a kid together.
Oh, wow.
And the kid's name, Ozzy. And I'm like, oh, my God. can't really get away from any of it. But she's a really gifted, talented person. And talk about ultimate flattery. And she made videos for these things and just did an incredible job.
You know what I always wanted to ask you or Mark, and I never did, is, of course, everybody knows that Slaughter was born out of the ashes of the Vinnie Vincent invasion. And, of course, you know, you were so instrumental with Vinnie and those two records. And that everybody knows the story that implodes. You and Mark go on and have this huge success with Slaughter. Did you ever think about in Slaughter playing any of the Vinnie Vincent songs? Did you ever think of doing as Slaughter? And have you ever done like Boys Are Gonna Rock or anything like that?
There were some gigs at during the lull in this music where we had nothing to lose and we played a little bit of one. I think we played a little Boys Are Gonna Rock and a little Shoot You Full of Love. And we looked at each other, and they're such mixed memories from all that time. I mean, we're obviously, we came from there, and you know, you'd never disparage something that you came from, but we had an interesting, shall we say, time going through it. It comes up from time to time, and people will say, you know, I saw this Freddy Krueger movie and it had Love Kills, and you know, why the hell wouldn't you guys do that? And how do you tell someone that loves something, well, if you understood the damage Right. Mentally, that's there. You hear it and it's beautiful, and then you hear it and you just become almost so angry. I think in time, you know, you'll hear something, but it has come up more as time goes on.
Yeah,
for sure.
I think it'd be cool. I mean, because who knows what's going on with Vinny now, but he's not really active in any real way as far as playing or touring. And I think there's a lot of people that do like some of those songs, and you guys are half that band, so you'd represent it well. I mean, he probably wouldn't like it, but who cares at this point? I mean, you can't stop somebody from doing somebody else's song, so
no,
for fun,
no,
I'm playing
really,
them live.
You can't. Again, it's come up, and you know, look, I wish everybody out there the best of luck. It's not an easy thing to do for a living, and when you see somebody up there and it looks fun and invigorating, it is fun and invigorating for the time you're there. Now you have to live the next 22 hours of your life.
Yeah.
And that might not be quite as fun and invigorating, and it can also be a little bit damaging. So for those of us that have made it through the damage, everybody on this boat, kudos to them because they're still here. I'm thankful for being alive every day.
Many musicians have said the hardest part of the day is the 22 hours you're not on stage.
That's absolutely right.
That's because the part you're getting paid for.
Yeah, and you can get into all kinds of horse shit and trouble, and we all have.
Yeah. Last thing. I always love talking to you, whether it's on mic or off mic. We talk for hours just hanging out, and I enjoy our conversations. It's always great to have a beer and just shoot the shit with you. I've been behind so much stuff, like well-documented, the Randy Rhoads, Ozzy story, Jakey Lee, all that stuff that you've done. People don't even know. You work with Vince Neil behind the scenes, all this stuff. Do you have a book in you? Would you like to write your story?
My story is definitely a different one, and my story is an inspiring one, and I do want it out there before my demise, and I think it would encourage other people, young kids in their bedroom or people going through a hard time, because I wasn't encouraged by any family. I was actually thrown out because I liked music, and in doing that, I got a job on the floor of a recording studio wrapping cables. I had to sleep on a foam roll-up mattress. And I cleaned the toilets and served coffee. From that, I ended up leasing the studio and taking it from the owner and making a number of records in there. And I was grateful. I was never bitter. But my story is also different. And whether it's Randy Rhoads or whether it's Jake or whether it's anything, Ozzy very down and out at that time, I think it's inspiring. And it was my story, a kid from the Valley that didn't really fit in. Because the thing is, in Hollywood at that time, if you didn't do drugs, you weren't necessarily in the good club. And I didn't do drugs, so often I didn't fit, or I didn't have my hair cut a certain way, and I didn't fit. So it's inspiring, I think, because it was different. The whole story's different. So I appreciate it, and I'd be interested to tell it.
Yeah, I hope you do. I hope you're able to do that, because I think a lot of people would love to read that story. I think there's a lot about what you do that people really don't fully understand and where you came from as well. Hey, listen, thank you for coming by for a few minutes. It's always great to see you.
Thank you.
Always great.
Yep, always great.
Dana Strum, everybody, my friend of many, many decades, and go see Slaughter if you're listening around the country. Of course, on the radio, they're coming your way. Or, of course, here on the ship with a couple shows still to come. Thank you, buddy. Appreciate
it. Yep. Thanks, everybody. Thank you.
We're going to have to get the train wreck in here that is Faster Pussycat. All right. So let me go down. Let me go around the horn here. On the very far end, he already lost a piece of his headset.
He's breaking it.
I am on the far end. Hey, Edward, how are we today?
Well, how are you?
I really care for you as a person.
Ladies and gentlemen, Slim Tender, Danny Nordahl.
Everybody, let's get a chant going. Look. I love you, brother.
Chad, good to see you, buddy.
Good, how are you, buddy?
We just want to make sure I got everybody's level right here.
We good?
Yeah, we're good.
Okay.
We had our ceremonial Jack Daniels moment last night.
We did. No one got it in their eyeballs this time?
Nobody got it in their eyeballs.
Hey.
For those that don't know, it's ceremonial for me to come out with a toast of Jack Daniels. But I was there late because everything ran late. And I was like, I got to get out there. And when I did this a year or two ago on the pool stage, we're outside. Chad takes the drink while playing. And as I'm pouring it in his mouth, a huge gust of wind comes, threw it right in his eyes. But the professional
beautiful
drummer and alcoholic that he is didn't miss a beat.
Half.
He didn't miss a beat.
I'm gonna
That Tammy, was it's like a man.
Total professional right here. He can take whiskey in his eyes and he didn't miss a beat.
See, that's what you alcoholics think.
I heard him
miss the beat completely.
You picked right up on it.
Yeah,
Tammy knew something was screwed up.
We call that the look. And he had it. Chad couldn't see it because he had whiskey in his eyes. But
it's Danny's birthday on Friday.
Happy birthday to me.
Happy birthday, Tender.
Except
it's his birthday month.
He's been celebrating for 300 days already, but yes. it's a
celebrating
countdown.
For 300
finally
years.
Finally close.
So, of course, we got the whole band here. We got Sam Bam Colton over here.
Hello.
Sam Bam, good to see you, buddy.
Good to see you too, man.
And also a return special engagement in Faster Pussycat from Ace Vaughn Johnson, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, I'm sorry. You can't get rid of me. Coming to you live from a remote microphone here.
Yeah. Hey, everybody. Just when he thinks he's out. They pull him back in.
He's not really in the band, so we have him on a separate mic kind of away from
he's
the
like
table.
This is.
Exactly. And put a little screen around you or
go
something.
Go stand in the parking lot.
But Tammy, how did Ace come to play these gigs with you? How'd you get him back in for these?
Sam Bam. Sam Bam was like, because we're like, our guitar player, Karen, couldn't get back in if we went out of the country.
In the middle of his green card.
Immigration shit.
Foreign people problems.
Yeah.
Right.
So the new guitar player in the band, besides Sam, the second guitar player, is Kieran, who's from where? Scotland?
Yeah.
Yes.
And he's played with you guys.
Yeah, he played with us on the last run.
Because people talk about this on the air all the time. They don't realize that for people that aren't in America, for them to get in sometimes, it's a big pain in the ass. It's difficult.
Well, it's
he's
a whole
he's
in.
It, yeah, he, he's if, in. If he left, just, if he just left, can't he go couldn't out. Get back problem. In.
Oh, if he left.
He's in the middle of his green card.
And he's not that tall. He couldn't get over the wall. I love you, Karen.
So basically, yeah, as soon as we knew that he couldn't do the cruise, I was like, I know Ace's schedule, and I know he's available. And so the biggest thing was just talking him into it.
And actually, you replaced Ace in the band. Ace is in L.A. Guns. You replaced Ace in the band, but obviously now we
have both for this the boat. Boat gets it special, so it's killer.
Yeah, it's really fun. We've been really good friends for a long time, and Ace is like the older brother that I never had. So
or wanted.
I did want. Always wanted. Always wanted.
Ace, how did it feel for you to get up and play?
It was awesome,
who
man.
Are these
it's
people?
Like putting on an old pair of skate shoes.
How
you
are
know?
Those people?
It was great. It was great to be back with my friends and Danny.
Yeah,
and,
thank you.
It was awesome. It was really I played with these guys for 10 years and in a bunch of different bands over the
Valentine Killer
last 15 years or so. And Sam and I have worked together and been on stage together, but it was the first time we got to play Pussycat songs together. So that for me was really special. So it was really cool. But half the show was me going like, how the fuck does this go? And also trying to not play what is now his parts.
Yeah. Because
that's what my brain automatically wants to play. Right. So, but it was great. I love these guys.
Well, Danny. Did you get a chance to work it out much before you did it? Or not
at all.
We didn't rehearse.
At all. No.
What else was new?
We did a Zoom call.
And we did a couple different songs we haven't played in a long time, too.
Some that Ace has never played, so.
Yeah, we did a FaceTime rehearsal. I basically sent some parts, and we talked and texted about some stuff, but we never actually physically sat down and played the songs together until on stage last night. So.
Wow. And then we added Jacob Button in at the end.
And Tyson on keys.
Well, Tyson, you got Tyson and Leslie. You had backing singers up there. There's some more people on stage than on the ship, I think, at one point. Yeah, Jake, were they dropping people in?
We turned it into Skinnerd.
Yeah. The girls from Paradise Kitty came up. It was awesome.
Yeah. But it was a lot of fun. And for people who have never been on this cruise, you're missing out because obviously it's a great time. But also, I mean, you guys doing that pool stage deal has become like you've done every one. Have you guys done every one? Right?
We're the only one that's done every one.
Yeah, now that Kix is gone,
we even did
ones.
An extra one. This is like the 12 dirty or whatever the fuck it
30
is.
Dozen.
Dirty dozen.
12.
We did 13. We've done 13. So
how did you?
Because we did the West Coast Shredders too.
Oh yeah, I did too.
When they did the West Coast Monsters of Rock, they did the East Coast with Shredders. It wasn't Monsters, so we did that one as well that year. We did two that year.
So I don't know if I'm 100% accurate on this, but I think that probably me and you guys, as far as like people on the ship, like whether they be performers or hosts or whatever, I think we're the only ones that have done every single one.
I think Larry and Bill,
you know.
Well, obviously the guys that
right. Yeah, 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 those guys in April. Here.
Yeah,
no, we know though.
No, I don't think April.
No,
was
April
here
hasn't done all ball. I know, and Gene
and Gene's
few,
back.
Gene yeah. was gone yeah, and right, back, yeah. but consistently we've never missed one. It's who knew we'd be the
we
survivors?
Have senior,
yeah,
we have seniority.
Think about that for a minute.
Not with one dart.
How unlikely? Yeah,
we it's have definitely a year to year proposition, though.
Yes, it is.
It's a year to year proposition.
Chad's not going down with two barrels. No way he's going down with two barrels. And we'll be on 25 as well, so we're already scheduled for that.
Yeah, well. Me as well, but the bottom line is the band is sounding so good. It's so much fun always to see you. It's such a scene out there, and I gotta ask you, Tammy, about the inevitable question, because new music, man, I absolutely love Like a Ghost. I've told you this. I think it's on par with anything that Faster Pussycat has ever done. You got Nola in there, you got Pirate Love you're doing as well. What are we working our way slowly towards actually
yeah,
making a full album?
We have it. Not exactly. We're just putting them out a little at a time. And then pretty soon when they're all together, then you get the whole record.
So
then
what's next?
Next is Motorbike. And we did a cover of NXS's Don't Change. It's a B-side. And that's done. We're just waiting. It's already been mastered and stuff. But we're just waiting. It might come out right before we go on this run in May, or it might. We might, depending
on the
setup. I might
come out in 15 years. Either way.
So Motorbike is a brand new song.
Yeah.
An original.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're probably going to drop that. What do you think?
It all depends on what's going on with Golden Robot. So we'll see. If we don't get that rocking scheduled set up for May, it's going to come out in August.
That's your label.
And oh, it's July. Yeah.
Put it out. Okay. And what's the touring plan? What do you have coming
That's
up?
That's the thing, too. We got a scheduled. I haven't seen any dates yet, but we're supposed to start around just before M3.
Okay.
So end of April through the end of May for the first part, and then we're going to go back out in the end of July to the end of August for another 4 weeks there. That's our schedule to do shit, and then we're supposed to maybe go to Europe in September. So
didn't you guys do something insane recently? Well, you always do, but didn't you do something insane recently where you played like 30 shows in 30 days?
27 shows in 30 days. Yeah,
I mean, that's just
like
every
yeah,
tour.
Yeah, like in winter too. Like we were like it was supposed to go out in October, early October, up to Halloween, and then instead went in November. So we were like playing like in Montana and North Dakota in November.
Like that's always smart.
Green Bay and Minnesota.
We played outside in Texas. It was freezing. I think half of us got sick the next day, right?
Yeah, well, when you see the accommodations and the way Faster Pussycat rolls on the road and the amenities they have at their disposal, you can understand. You know, the private jets and everything.
Oh, yeah.
You roll. Can understand your desire to want to be on the road that much, but it is the idea here, though, is to actually get a full new album at some point, right?
Yeah,
that's eventually what you're working towards.
Yeah, and it's just a different world these days, you know what I mean? The full record thing and labels, and it's just a different world. It's not the same. You know, it's not like the old days of Atlantic and Elektra and where you got the new record out this year, and then 2 years later, you got another one.
It actually works a little better this way because we have so many songs we want to play live anyway.
And yeah, nobody.
How are you going to fit them all in if you've got one thing? So when they come out sporadic, it's easier to work it into the set.
Well, I think that it's great to start it like this. But as an old school fan, and I think most agree with this, at the end of the day, it is great to have a concise album, even if these songs, which I hope they are part of that. So in other words, there's 12 tracks, you know, I Like a Ghost and all that still should be on the actual record, I would hope.
Yeah, and some of the drum stuff, like for Ghost, we're done when like Nola was done. We did a lot of that at the same time, and we're getting ready to do some more basic tracks on some of these other songs that we've been working
that are
on.
Done,
some of the stuff I started like a long time ago. We're like, oh, I gotta go back because I don't want to forget about them, because right, there's some cool riffs. Just like Ghost was like the first one that I wrote sober, started, you know what I mean?
Is that
started with from scratch, as opposed to Nola was an older track that I finished up. Well, I wrote back right after Katrina and stuff. So it's like.
And Chad, you were telling me the other day that playing live, you're leaning a little bit more on the first record. You guys playing more from the first record than you normally do?
We kind of been jumping around. Well, be on the ship, yes. But yeah, we've kind of been jumping around doing different
stuff.
Chad
told you that?
Yeah,
don't believe that.
So it's not that.
He just tells you what.
Yeah.
We try to do a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
Just
like we've always done.
Team, up next, Chad.
Do you ever sit down and listen to the first record yourself?
Yeah, I had to listen to it before coming on the boat because I hadn't done ship rolls in forever. I think we did it like on the second boat or whatever.
Yeah, we did.
So that was the last time I fucking heard it.
87. I mean, I think the record's a classic. But when you listen to it, what comes back for you?
Just being a kid. It's just like, oh my God, we were just so young and so we hadn't played that long. You know what I mean? Of a band, we were together 10 months. So it's like, and that was the beginning of everything. There wasn't a period of time where we had a bunch of songs written for years and then we started went in to do a record like, they say, the Georgia Satellites that were around forever and then got a record deal and then had this bitchin' first album. We were writing songs for the record. We were going into pre-production and we didn't have enough songs. Because we had Venus from Shocking Blue as one of the tracks and then Bananarama came out with it right when we were in pre-production. So we wrote Don't Change That Song right in pre-production for the record.
Wow.
We didn't have enough songs for a record.
Ever come out with you doing it?
We didn't do it. We didn't record it. We used to play it live. That was one of our songs that we did fucking cool too.
Right.
as cool as a band that's been together eight months.
Weeks.
Exactly.
and we thought
it was cool.
Yeah. You know, I was just talking to Dana Strum about the idea of like his story is so interesting and all the things he's been a part of that people don't know. I mean, you've got an amazing story as well, coming out the other side and where you are now, healthy, sober, better than ever, in my opinion. But obviously everything from going to the Cat House and all these different things. Do you have a book in you? Would you like to write your story?
There's a book in the works right now.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's going Rare Bird. People did Crabbe's, John's, and Matt Sorum's. And I'm reading Sammy Offit's book right now, too.
Well, I didn't know he had a book.
It's the same company, too. Rare Bird.
How far along is your book?
We started last year, but the guys that I'm doing it with are in Sweden, in Stockholm. So we've gotten together last January in LA a few times, and they were out in December. We got together, and we were going to get together before, like in June, but we were on the road this last June. So we're doing we did a Zoom just 2 weeks ago, and then we're going to do a couple more Zooms. We're getting it together, so.
That's great. That'll be a great read.
I'm just got an old
mind
and trying to remember all this shit. Fucking crazy.
I'm doing a comic book.
I wake up in the middle of the night going, oh, I can't forget about that. I got to put that in the book. Well, and then I'll go back to sleep and I don't remember shit.
It came to me too because it's interesting. There's so many bands on this cruise, and one of them is Ace Frehley. And I remember the very first time I saw you guys play live. I signed Ace, and Ace went out on tour, and the bill, at least the shows I remember going to through Texas, were
Y&T,
Ace, and you
Frehley
guys.
And us opening. That was our first tour. That was our first national
tour.
That's
the first
ever.
Time I saw you, too.
Our first show was in Corpus Christi with Y&T and Ace Frehley.
So I was at the show in Dallas, so probably
that was a couple days later.
A few days later. I remember. And then I think you or
the Bronco Bowl?
Yes. You or Y&T dropped off, and then it became Gary Moore. Were you ever out when Gary Moore was on it?
We did one show, like in Houston. It was a mix between that tour and another thing at some arena with Loudness and Gary Moore. And I remember doing that, but that's kind of like vague, too, because it was like a blur of shit back then.
Totally. I just remember Gary Moore, who rightfully was a god. Because
we went out with
player.
Cooper. We did that. We then went out with Alice Cooper.
Yeah.
And we did some with Ace, too, as well.
I just remember Gary Moore is this god of a guitar player, and he is, and he was. He passed away, but still, he was huge in Europe, but nobody knew him here, and he was third billed, and he was not happy, and his dressing room was like the size of a closet, and I remember walking by, watching him warm up, and he was like shredding away, and it was so intense because he was like, you're not happy about the situation and taking it out on the guitar.
He was really cool to us. I remember that because I never met him. I never knew his stuff. I heard of him.
Yeah.
But he was like super nice to us. And at that period of time, we were so new that, you know, there's certain things we do, like some of those shows where there's a bunch of other bands like Yngwie and different. They didn't treat us that well.
Right.
We were like the new punks. And they're like, fuck these guys. Put them in the broom closet and shit like that for the dressing room. So That is all cool. Whatever.
All right. So before I run out of time, let me go around the horn here. Anything you guys want to push out or plug that you may have happening outside of the band that you want to give a shout out to? Chad, you're still doing the Bloody Mary stuff, right?
I am doing the Bloody Mary stuff. I'll be doing a demo of that on the cruise.
Devil's
actually.
Crown?
Yep. We're doing that on Tuesday, tomorrow.
So people into Bloody Marys, Chad makes his own mix.
Good stuff.
You're drinking it without the vodka, I'm assuming.
No, I don't. Yeah, I use it for like other stuff. Cooking.
But it's the house mix. It's the house mix at the Rainbow now. So
if people go to the Rainbow, you're going to get that as your Bloody Mary.
You go to the websites.
Oh, I love virgin Bloody Marys anyway. I just love tomato juice.
I've got something going on.
Coloring book.
I can't even imagine.
I'm writing a book about Tammy Down. He's got doctor's appointments. To go direct competition with his book. My book is going to be. Like TMZ.
All the dirt. All the real.
Buy my book. His book.
Real.
So wait a minute.
It's called Dirt.
So wait a minute. You're gonna write your own unauthorized book about Tammy and release it the same day Tammy's book comes out.
Well, he's just doing laundry.
He got me a pen for my birthday, so I started writing.
Oh, and they gave him some quarters too for laundry.
Oh yeah.
Are you guys still doing motocross stuff?
Yeah, whatever.
Yes, we are. Next week, we'll be in Hollywood doing shows.
You are?
Yes, next week.
Oh, there's shows
I thought Mark
up.
Diamond retired.
He's out with the tours right now. But yeah, we're the 15th and the 17th in Hollywood, we're doing two shows.
Oh, yeah, we are.
Sam, in addition to Faster Pussycat, you play with Dorothy.
Everybody.
And Butterside.
Yes.
So
how you I love those guys.
How you splitting everything up? You making it all work as best you can? Or what are you doing?
So far, it's luck. So Dorothy is starting to work on a new record, so we're all supposed to record on that very soon. And Butterside is actually going on tour in a couple weeks. We're opening for the 69 Eyes, doing an East Coast run for about 3 weeks. So if anybody is on that part of the world,
you gotta come
check it out.
Ma'am.
What's your favorite of the three bands?
Oh, don't let me in. I have things that I love very dearly about all three. Very dearly. Butterside is very personal, and then, you know, Faster, I love these guys so much. And then Dorothy, I love them very much too. So.
See, we love you too, Sammy.
He may be young, but he knows how to.
Oh yeah, he knows. He's got it.
Oh man,
he's very diplomatic.
He's a good
kid. He may be a youngster, but he knew how to answer that question, man. Yeah. I almost that was a gotcha moment. He's too nice of a guy to give any other answer than actually. You got your dad on the cruise with you, right?
I did. I brought my dad on the cruise.
Where's dad?
Ben?
Hey, Ben.
Is this his first cruise?
First Monsters of Rock cruise,
All right. You having fun? He's having fun?
He's having a good time.
There you go. Ace.
He's leaving like as soon as we got his boat, right?
Oh, yeah. I already packed my bags.
Guns start right after this.
Yeah, L.A. Guns hits the road with KK's Priest this week, literally.
So you go right from this to that.
From one to the other, yeah.
You already packed.
Yeah, I'm ready to go.
Ace is like, it's that scene in Godfather 3. Once I thought I was out, they pulled me back in.
Exactly it.
How is this whole run? I mean, you've been in L.A. Guns now how long?
About 6 years.
And, I mean, I see you guys play all the time. I mean, you've really, really feel like you're just made for that role now. I mean, you seem way more comfortable up there, and you're singing more as far as playing guitar with Tracy. So the whole experience has been great for you?
Yeah, it's a great gig. I mean, this was a great gig too. You know, I love my guys here. I mean, we spent 10 years with these a-holes, but I still love
fucktards.
Them. You know?
And me.
And
Tender. With Guns too, they're all like, we're all like a big family.
Yeah. Yeah. It's always been incestuous since day one.
Since the get-go.
You know?
Yeah.
And honestly, if I wasn't here, who knows? It might be Tracy here. You know what I mean? It's not like it wasn't discussed at one point at some other junction.
No, we asked him. He said no.
Yeah.
Also, it would be the first time he's jumped in, too.
Yeah. You mean
you're
going to
Tracy
family.
Play with Faster?
Oh, Tracy's done it before.
Yeah. Tracy's done it before.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah. We've all played in. With Tracy.
We played it. Yeah, we played it in L.A. Guns.
In L.A. Guns.
God,
yeah, Sam's filled in for me.
It's all incestuous.
You are incestuous. Danny likes that. He likes incestuous.
Yeah, he likes incest.
I'm a power bottom.
He's an incestuous rapist.
So anyhow, we're working on another record already.
Where my rapist at?
And that's that.
It's a therapist.
Tender, come on.
It's therapist, not the rapist.
Right, it's therapist.
Oh.
That's exactly what
I mean. That's what your mother said, Trebek.
And finally, Tammy, you said you're working on the book. Any other projects you got going on that you want to talk about?
Not really. Just working on tracks. We're getting ready to record some more drums and stuff when we get back home, too. And probably over at Gilby's and doing riding motorcycles and doing what I can.
You're still doing leather stuff, though, too, right? Yeah.
Casey, not as much as I don't really do it for to make money off of. Usually it's for friends doing stuff. I know I got a strap in for Ace and Tenders back there, been bugging me for one, two. So it's mostly for friends and whatnot, like motorcycle bags for friends, bikes and shit.
Right, right.
It takes a lot of time. It's not like easy, simple shit. Everything's cut by hand and pounded out and.
How'd
stuff.
You start to?
That's what she said.
I got into it because I wanted something for my motorcycle, and then. Some of the stuff out there was just kind of stupid, and I was like, I'll figure out how to make. I used to make leather stuff way back in the old days, back in, you know, L.A., back when I worked in retail sled and stuff like that. For
oh, wow.
Rock and roll shit to make money.
Yeah, know, yeah. So. All right. Well, a lot going on with these guys as usual. Everybody's multitasking, bunch of different stuff, but if you get the opportunity and they are coming your way, go see Faster Pussycat if you want a great night of real, live, raw rock and roll, man. It is so much fun. So many great songs. And I can honestly say the new music, by any indication, everything coming out of the new stuff is just, Like a Ghost to me is phenomenal.
Thank
so,
you.
And you can see when you guys are playing this stuff live, it goes down. People like,
yeah, certainly
people
does.
Are digging it, and that's great to see as well. Well, thanks to all of my guests. Too much fun there. We had tons of great stuff going on. That cruise is always such a blast. I actually have three more cruises coming up in the next 4 or 5 weeks or so. I've got a cruise called On the Blue, which I will do a couple radio shows from. And then I've got the two Creed cruises coming up that I will be a host on board as well. So a lot of time coming on the high seas for me between now and the end of April. But it all got started with the granddaddy of them all for me, the Monsters of Rock cruise, and all of those great guests that you just heard. And again, not even beginning to scratch the surface on the guests that are on that ship. However, next week on the podcast, I'll bring you broadcast day 2 with more great guests from the Monsters of Rock cruise. Hope you enjoyed day 1. Thank you for listening to the podcast. Please join me each and every day for Trunk Nation live on Sirius XM 103, Faction Talk, 3 to 5 Eastern, or anytime on the Sirius XM app. Have yourselves a great week, everybody, and I'll talk to you next week on the podcast.